last couple of years have seen, sort of in the United States and a couple of places here, like there's a young man who helps with our show, Tim, who's keen to set up a gay-straight alliance group. This is just a student group at a tough high school in Brisbane at Marsden. Do you think that if a gay-straight alliance group had existed at Uppingham, that it would have changed your life at school, and would you have joined?
Probably I would. I mean, of course, the very word didn't exist in those days. It was, you know, and the you know, that it argues a politicism which just didn't exist in sexuality in those days. There was no such idea. I think what one would have valued was just the sense of not being alone. You know, the fact, you know, one would have valued some of the wit and relaxation that's present in the whole queer world now these days. And that's the thing that that makes life easier. So that you know, basically, it's rather cool to be gay. That's the thing. Mm. So that although, of course, people do shout faggot in the schoolyard, in the playground, and you know, and there is still bullying and there is still victimisation, it's so much rarer. And if a gay-straight alliance can help make it cooler to be gay, so that someone who shouts faggot just looks stupid, you know, just looks like, you know, complete, mm. you know, 10 times of arse, you know, what? You know, it's just, mm. that's the thing, because, yes, I mean, there are tough schools, I'm sure, in Australia. One thinks of Australia, of course, and England, in a sort of rather hazy way, as this perfectly multicultural and perfectly balanced society, but I'm sure it has all kinds of problems, like every other kind of country. I know you've got some strange political woman who seems to be a bit sort of on the right wing side, and you know, it's not all heaven in Oz, but and that's probably true in most of the so-called Western world, that there's a kind of mixture, you know, of, I mean, America is more extreme than anywhere, isn't it? I mean, you've got San Francisco on the one hand, but then you've got everything below the Bible Belt being just almost unbelievably foul, it's a very strange thing. And anything that stops too much ghettoization, I think, is a good idea. I mean, if people want to live amongst their own kind, then there's nothing wrong with it at all. But if they feel they can only do that, you know, that which is part of the problem in America, you can only live really in San Francisco or Chicago or Los Angeles, New York, or some of the bigger cities. You can only live there, you know, in a sort of ghetto. But what you can't do is live in Wilmington, North Carolina, or Birmingham, Alabama, or Pensacola, or whatever, and be that kind of easy and proud. And I think that's a shame. So if gay-straight alliances help with that, then I think it's a very good thing.
Mm. Certainly. I've reported at the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras for 4ZZZ for the last several years.
Yeah.
Last year was the first time that there's been a major entry by a Jewish group, and it was called The Stars of David Come Out. I spoke to one man who came from Johannesburg, and he has never marched in a gay pride parade in Johannesburg, but he came to Sydney and marched in the Mardi Gras parade with other gay and lesbian Jewish people from around the world, and that would have been a hugely moving experience.
I bet it was, yeah. I bet it was. Well, it's a very odd thing about, there's something about the Sydney Mardi Gras, isn't it? I mean, I know people who go to Sydney just to be in the Mardi Gras, and from Britain, that is, it's a hell of a lot of money, it's a hell of a lot of miles to go when there is, you know, London has its Pride weekend and marches and things and free concerts in the park in London, and it's a big event and thousands turn up and it's, you know, very good and you know, well attended, and, you know, rock stars come and perform free gigs and things. But there's something about the Sydney Mardi Gras that seems to attract people who don't feel as comfortable marching in their own country, and I think it's somehow there's a kind of just a feeling of license and freedom about the very words, and people think, yes, you know, you can be yourself and you can be there, really, absolutely let it all hang out. And I think particularly, of course, yes, Jewish people is very, very, I mean, I grew up in a Jewish family in the sense my mother's Jewish, but my father isn't, but it's, as you know, with the Jews, it's the mother that counts in every sense. But it's, you know, and it's very difficult. There are some very orthodox Jewish families who cannot accept gayness at all in any way, and really reject their children.
Mm. You have a broad appreciation of music, and I've seen references in your pieces to, say, from Elvis Costello right through to the classics. But Vivian Stanshall and the Neil Innes' Bonzo Dog Band particularly impressed you, and they're one of my favourite bands as well. What do you like about them?
Well, I think it was that I was, you know, I wasn't a cool rocker. I was around at the time in which things like Pink Floyd and what was called progressive rock were the really big things at school, and they were just a bit too kind of heavy and overblown for my taste. But I loved the Bonzos because they're a wit. I mean, they were very, very funny. They were musically very good and incredibly eclectic, all kinds of styles, from jazz to fantastic parodies of all sorts of music. And Vivian Stanshall had this surrealist, sort of Dadaist sense of humour, really, quite extraordinary, but she was founded on, again, a huge influence on me, and on a marvellous voice, the most extraordinary voice. It was like rich gravy pouring out of a jug, you know. It was just marvellous. It was, if you could embody the sound of old wireless valves of the 1940s, you know, glowing orange with a slight dusty smell from a Bakelite wireless with a sort of sunburst on front of the speaker, and it takes 3 minutes to warm up when you turn it on, and then you get a very clear English voice coming out of it, then that's the sort of voice he had. And it was just marvellous to have such surreal and extraordinary humour coming out of that totally British sound. I mean, it was that mixture that, of course, then led to Monty Python. He was a huge influence on them, and in fact Neil Innes, the other major member of the Bonzos, wrote most of the music for the Pythons, the music that Eric Idle himself didn't write, and all the stuff for Monty Python and the Holy Grail and songs like that.
Certainly.
And, so, you know, I think that was a very, very formative thing, the fact that you could be quirky and surreal and eccentric and bizarre within the cloak of being incredibly English. It's, as it were, it's part of the English thing, but I think, you know, Australians share it too, that, you know, as it were, if you're wearing a punk clothes and you fart, it isn't funny or interesting. If you're wearing a tweed suit and you fart, it's somehow funny, if you see what I mean. And that's a very typical thing about Britain, that, you know, if you really imitate the manners of the establishment, but are then strangely eccentric or satirical, you can get away with it. I remember Ben Elton, who's a kind of honorary Australian, as I'm sure you know, that spends a lot of time living in Australia and has an Australian wife, and I remember Ben saying to me that it was completely unfair that he was always getting letters and complaints for his language on television, when in fact he goes out of his way not to swear. He says flipping heck and things like that, but somehow, and I can get away with it's in paperweight actually, I think I still hold the record for saying fuck on British television the most times in the shortest number of seconds, as it were. I said it's about 70 times in a minute and a half. I mean, there was a point to it. It was actually an interview program, and I was talking about censorship and about, you know, just about the use of the word and where it came from and so on. And it didn't get a single complaint. And I think it's because of my voice and manner, whereas poor old Ben just has to say flipping heck, and because he's got a sort of sub-Cockney manner, and people, you know, for some reason find him, you know, like a sort of Jack Russell yammering at their ankles, they get very upset and annoyed by him. And I think that's a, you know, it's a classic English thing, that if you do it in a sort of strangely fuddy-duddy style, people find it more acceptable.
Right. Things are moving ahead in Britain in terms of progressive attitudes and law reform for gay men and lesbians, but especially recently with the Blair government pushing through the age of consent and equalising that at 16.
Mm.
That's wonderful, but other things are happening, like watching the replay of the last night of the proms. And every time they went back to the crowd at Centenary Square, here's this big rainbow flag being waved in the middle of the crowd.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice touch.
Very odd. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's always going to be the way with Britain. Things happen very, very slowly, and you hope at best to take maybe 3 steps forward and 2 back every time. And it can be achingly frustrating, and one can rage against it as much as you like, but unless one realises that it has always been that way. Revolution has never worked in Britain. It's always been just slow little drip, 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 and eventually people get the point and they change, and they, you know, 5 years later you can't remember why it was that they made such a fuss about it. The age of consent, you know, there were people screaming that it was a charter for perverts and that the whole fabric of civilization would come crashing down about our ears. But now, you know, I dare say it's more or less accepted. There is still a terrible stain in our statute book, which is a ridiculous thing called Section 28 of the Education Act, in which it is against the law to promote homosexuality, whatever that means. That's what it was a thing that came in under the Thatcher government, which was supposed to be a poo in the face of what they perceived as PC kind of attitudes, in which teachers would explain gay lifestyles to their classes. And they said it should be illegal for them to promote it as normal. But of course, not a single conviction has been brought under this ludicrous act. But time and time again, the House of Commons has voted to repeal it since Tony Blair came to power. But some of the more ludicrous dinosaurs in the House of Lords, particularly one Baroness Simon, I think, no, is that her name? Something like that. Ghastly woman. Has fought against it and against it being repealed. And so it stays on our statute books as one of the most absurd pieces of legislation ever to stay in a statute book. But generally speaking, things are better. Yes, I mean, at least there's a civilised norm about the age of consent, you know, just being the same. The fact is, you just don't need the word gay anywhere in a in a constitution or on statute books. You just simply say, you know, if people are married, and you can recognise a common law marriage in English law, if it's a man and a woman, you do gay marriage too. If they're married, then they have these rights, and if they're not, then, you know, and so on. And, you know, because so often justice comes down to small things like, you know, two gay people living together, and they might each have a car, and do they get a local parking permit? They can only get it for one car, because a married couple can have it for two, but not two gay people. And it sounds like such a small thing, but it's a kind of humiliation. It's a kind of we still don't really count. We're still not really recognised. And it's just getting those sort of things right. And actually, that's where the actor Ian McKellen and his group Stonewall, which was named after the American events of 1969, are terrific, because they don't make a huge fuss about it in great political ways and throw stones and throw dog turds through the window of number 10 Downing Street. They actually sit down very quietly and have meetings with politicians and just badger away quietly and in a kind of grown-up way, and that's what gets results. Hello, it's Stephen Fry here on Queer Radio 4ZZZ, the queer radio station you like to snuggle up to most.